You first started following the club in the 1960s. So how did you start supporting Liverpool?
Well, you never know because you're 7 years of age. But my dad was a football fan, a sports fan. And I suppose he had a choice to make himself. And I think he was a Liverpool fan, not a passionate Liverpool fan like possibly I have become. But and you can't ever remember your first game, but you sort of do remember the first game you can remember. And I absolutely do remember going to see Liverpool play Leyton Orient. Actually, on the October the 28th, 1961, which is a couple of days away in terms of 60 years. And it was 3-3. And interestingly enough, Roger Hunt scored the first two goals in that game. And it was in the second division. And Liverpool were in the second division. And had been in the second division since 1954. And were struggling to get out of it. They kept finishing third when only two went up. Fourth, third. And then Shanks came along and in he got it sorted out. He basically sorted it out. And that game, Liverpool-Leyton Orient, was between the two teams who went up. Liverpool went up as champions. Leyton Orient as second, runners-up. Liverpool went on to all sorts of glory. Leyton Orient ran straight back down all the divisions. So, you know, that's football for you, really.
And you mentioned Sir Roger Hunt. I just want to get your tribute to him. Andy and St John, who both lost this year as well. You know, what did they mean to Liverpool Football Club and what did they mean to you as a fan?
Well, people always ask me what's my favourite Liverpool team, and it's the 1960s team for various reasons. Firstly, I found Bill Shankly to be an absolutely inspiring figure to listen to. And when you're growing up, these guys are heroes. You know, there was no warming up at 2:30 or 2:40. In fact, it is really now 2:30 or 2:45, let's be honest. The players used to come out at 2:55. Roger would be racing around the penalty area. Ian St. John, alongside Peter Thompson, would be juggling footballs. And Roger Hunt and Ian St. John were an absolutely crucial part of Shankly's team. Obviously, he brought Yeats and St. John in to give him his spine. But Roger was already there, and he kept him there, and he made him a better player. And Roger scored regularly, frequently. He didn't score, I would say he didn't score many absolutely blinding goals. He just scored all the time. And he scored 41 goals in the league in the season they won the title. And in the nine seasons in the decade of the 60s, he was the leading scorer for Liverpool in eight of them, which takes some doing. And and of course, he played for England in the World Cup. And, you know, that gave us all at home somebody to own. The Evertonians had Ray Wilson to follow. And he played in every game, Roger Hunt. And of course, there was a lot of pressure for Jimmy Greaves to get back in the side. He was in the side at the start of the World Cup, got injured. And the Southern press were very heavily on Jimmy Greaves' side. But Ramsey kept Hurst and Hunt together for the quarterfinals, the semi-final, and the final itself. And Roger scored three goals in those World Cup finals. And I suppose the icing on the cake was his number for England was 21, and my birthday was on the 21st. So all of those things come together too. And I was there. I saw his last goals for Liverpool. He came on late in a European match and scored right at the end, although we went out on away goals in that game. And his last league game, he came on as substitute against Southampton when we were losing, and he scored two goals in a minute or 90 seconds. And that was pure Roger Hunt. And of course, his testimonial was watched by about 56,000 people. The Saint was different, a really clever, crafted footballer and tough. Yeah, you know, he might have been small in stature, but he'd take anybody on. And a very clever player, a foil for Roger Hunt, and a big character on the pitch, along with his best mate, Ron Yates. These two were, when people talk about legends, and the word is thrown about too loosely, those two players were legends of Liverpool Football Club.
Another Liverpool legend has written the foreword to your book as well, Jamie Carragher. When did you first get to know Jamie?
I got to know Jamie probably best got to know him through my time at the FA when he was in the England squad. And what became very clear to me is he lived and breathed football. I mean, I think I know my stuff, but I bow to Jamie Carragher in terms of knowing his histories and everything. He was always had a head inside a football book. And when he finished playing and decided to take a job in the media, I gave him a call because my history had been bringing people through from sport, not just football, from all sport, and turning them into broadcasters. And for some it works and for some it doesn't. But I think if you don't give them a chance or an idea or just a clue of how to make it work, you're not really doing your job. Now, I was not working for Sky, but I just wanted to protect Jamie a bit. And I gave him two bits of advice. One was don't hit every ball for six. And what I meant by that was not everything you say has to be a headline, because then there are no headlines. Don't hit every ball for six, which he kept to actually until the European Super League was mentioned. And then he hit every ball out the ground and we all applauded him and Gary Neville for doing it. And the second one was just to occasionally ask for real-time replays, because you can analyse incidents in a game through slow motion a dozen ways, but the action itself isn't played in slow motion. So occasionally you need to refer to the actuality speed of the game. So they were just a couple of tips of game gave Jamie, and he's always thanked me for them very, very graciously.
Didn't you get Gary Neville's break in punditry too?
I did, and that was because he got injured just before the 2002 World Cup, and I'd already met him several times, and I knew he'd be a guy of opinions, and it was also very useful to have an current England player on the panel. I remember when Brian Robson got injured during the World Cup, when he came back, he came straight onto our team. So I was happy to get Gary. And Gary did exactly what I expected him to do, which was have an opinion, but not not let himself down in terms of dressing room chat that he may have heard down the line from the World Cup itself. He's gone on to do a lot in football. I think he's a very credible voice on football. Although he was a touch emotional on Sunday for obvious reasons.
So, on to your first season as a Liverpool fan, 61-62. You were a lucky mascot, weren't you? Because they gained promotion to First Division that first year. You were kind of supporting them.
They did. I mean, but you're not to know that at 7 years of age. I say in the book, I was going to bed at 8 o'clock and watching Four Feather Falls. I was just getting introduced to football. And I actually do remember going to Goodison as well during that period as well. So how I eventually went red rather than blue, I don't really know, because in truth, if you were following the successful team, then that you would have been following Everton, because Everton in 62-63 were champions, league champions, and a very good side, a very good side.
And when they gained promotion, can you still feel what it was like back then, or was it more when they won the league in 63-64? Did you take it all more in then, did you?
I think if you embrace all the 60s, the 60s were a fantastic time to come from Liverpool, whether you like football or not. The music scene was phenomenal. The Beatles were ruling the world. We had fantastic comic entertainment. Ken Dodd was, at the Palladium for about 9 months, his own show. Jimmy Tarbuck had broken through on Sunday night at the Palladium. And our two football teams were, we won the league 63-64. We won the cup 64-65. Then 65-66, we won the league again, and Everton won the FA Cup. And of course, for me, that culminated in the FA Charity Shield at Goodison Park, which is one of my favourite moments watching football, because it was a fortnight after the World Cup final, and the first people to emerge from the tunnel on what was a terrible day, torrential rain, were Roger Hunt and Ray Wilson carrying the World Cup itself, and they brought the house down. It's fantastic. Followed by Ron Yates and Brian LeBeau bringing out their respective trophies. So there was a real buzz about the city. In fact, when I did I made a documentary on the history of Liverpool about 10 years into my time at the BBC. I did it because I'd been in the archive and knew what was there. And I often see it now replayed. I managed to dig out the panorama where there was film of the cop on the day Liverpool clinched the title against Arsenal in 64. And actually, that panorama that night was called Liverpool, the most talked about city in Europe. And that's what you felt as a scouser in that decade, yeah.
And you mentioned the 64-65 season when they won the FA Cup. But, you know, that season they wore all red for the first time. It was their European Cup debut. They won the FA Cup for the first time. And you started to go to Anfield on a regular basis, didn't you, as well? So how did that come about?
Subtle negotiations with my mother and father. I mean, I used to go with them. But my dad often worked on the games. He was one of the policemen who walked around the pitch. We'd make our own way to the game, and he'd pick us up after he'd come off duty at the game, and he always took my autograph book in to the away dressing room. So I've got some great autographs, down the years. But now I managed to persuade my parents. I'd started at a new school, senior school, so perhaps it was time for me to be allowed to go to the game on a regular basis, and I did. And I used to get the 6C for up to the Rocket, then walk from the Rocket to Old Swan, get a football special, and then walk up Priory Road and pay me way to go. Whether it was decided for me, I ended up watching the game in the paddock. I can see the spot now. I was in line with the 18-yard box at the Anfield Road end. I didn't have the courage to go in the boys' pen, and I didn't have the height to go in the cop. So I think it was in the right place, really. And I'd stayed in that spec for about 15 years, because once you find your spec, that's how you watch the game and you get to know the people around you. I once watched a game from that spec, Liverpool, Leicester City, and it was Alan Evans' debut. So we're all very excited about that. And he scored in the 12th minute or something like that to make Liverpool 3-0 up at that time. And then they scored another goal about 2 minutes later. They were 4-0 up after 15 minutes. And the guy always used to come to stand next to me straight from work. His shift finished at 3 o'clock. So he used to get there about 3:15. And as you would normally say, I haven't missed anything. And nobody knew how to break it to him. We were 4-0 up. And the game finished 4-0. And there was no telly in those days. So I always imagined him having to go in the pub that night and explain how the goals were scored.
And of course, the FA Cup as well. You describe in the book how you all sat down as a family to watch it from the start to the end without moving. Those FA Cup final Saturdays were just great, weren't they? You know, especially when your team was involved too.
I think that was the thing. I mean, they were required viewing. They were the only club game live, which people can probably not get their heads around, young people now. It was the only club game live the whole season. And it was an incredibly important match, the FA Cup final, with its history and heritage and everything about it. Yes, people wanted to win the league, but to win the FA Cup final was something very, very special. And Liverpool had had two cracks at it against Burnley just before the war, so First World War. Didn't make it, and had a pretty poor performance against Arsenal at Wembley in 1950. Didn't win it. So 65 was special in the sense that was the day we finally laid that one to rest. You know, Rodgers scored, Bremner equalised, but the Saints scored a great header. And you were there from 11 o'clock in the morning till, with extra time, about 6 o'clock on the in the best armchair you could get in the house. And I always remember we went out into the street and then replayed the game, and somebody came out with a silver foil cup, and we all ran round the close as cup winners. Yeah. And then the following day, got ourselves down to the city centre to watch the team come home. These were, big, big moments.
I'm Carl Woodward, and my guest tonight is Brian Barwick, who's talking about his book, 60 Years of Red and Counting, A Lifetime's passion. And Brian, I just want to get you on Bill Shankly. I know you touched on him earlier on, but what effect did he have on you growing up and watching the team and listening to that great voice of his?
Well, he was a remarkable character. And, you know, down the years, I've met a lot of remarkable characters inside and outside sport. And he stands alongside the best of them. One of the things we were able to do as youngsters was go at half-term, and this would be a typical half-term, to go and see the Liverpool team train. Now, these days, it would be no doubt a commercial deal or a day out for a sponsor. But then, the first half dozen or dozen of you that turned up on the morning were allowed in to watch the training. And me and a mate called Andy, we used to go at least twice during the half-term, on each half-term, and we were allowed in. And rest assured, you could watch the players, but then Bill would come out and have a conversation with you. And, you know, you were gobsmacked that he'd be bothered to do it and awestruck that he was doing it. And so you did feel the intensity of his love and his passion for the game, one, Liverpool Football Club, two. And later, in later life, I saw him give a talk at the Law Society at Liverpool University, which I smuggled my way into. And for the first 10 minutes, you could tell the law student were not necessarily keen to be in the thing. They probably wanted to hear from a great judge or whatever. But believe you me, by the end of that hour, he had the meeting out of his hand. He just had a fantastic style of delivery. But it was based on his authenticity and his passion and his honesty, and you can tell I can tell myself what a impression he made on me, and at times not in any way, shape, or form to his style or effect. I have fallen back on listening to myself, try and deliver whether it's to a lot of people or a few people, the sort of talks he would give to his players to try and inspire people. And I think I still try and do it, actually.
And if we fast forward to the manager now, do you liken Jurgen Klopp to Bill Shankly? Is there some Shankly-isms in there?
I think there's some Kloppers. I think he is the perfect fit for Liverpool Football Club, Jurgen Klopp. A winner, you know, because what he did in Germany, I mean, Fergie said about Liverpool, but in a way, Klopp knocked Munich off the ... perch in Germany twice with Dortmund. And when he came, everybody, you know, he had to work him out. I remember watching him actually at Wembley. I think he was in the Champions League final. And He looked like he could be a professor rather than a football manager, just the way he was dressed and his tie and his length of his hair, possibly. But he is the perfect fit because he has a personality and character that carries you with him. He knows his football. You can see the players would run through a brick wall for him, like they did for Shanks. He has managed to embrace the fans and the fans embrace him, and bottom line, he's a winner, and that combination is pretty dynamic. And I think he's done a remarkable job, actually, and still doing, by the way, a remarkable job. You know, the last three games Liverpool have played, I was tallying it up, I think they've scored 13 goals. They were all away games, of course, they won them all. And yeah, so a remarkable figure. And I remember that story about when they drew very early on in his time with West Brom 1-1. I think Liverpool equalised late. And it was an average performance, but he got the team to run towards the cop and he went with them. And if you wanted to be a cynic, you'd say, well, what was that all about? But what he was trying to do was draw the crowd towards the players and the players towards the crowd, and we're all in it together. And it wasn't a gimmick. It was something he thought very seriously about. So, yeah, a remarkable character, I think.
And he brought the sixth European Cup. You've been to all of them. You were there for the 76-77 when you travel on train. You know,
yeah.
What was that like? What was that adventure like, going to your first European Cup final?
Well, you've used the right word. It was an adventure, because Liverpool had won the league. They then played in the FA Cup final against Manchester United. Nobody wants to lose an FA Cup final. Nobody wants, Liverpool wants to lose an FA Cup final against Manchester United. To be fair, Liverpool didn't play too well that day. But everybody came away from that game disappointed, because we weren't going to get the domestic double. But a lot of us were heading off to Rome, you know, on the Monday. And so we were, you know, the safety net was having this trip to the European Cup final. And we all got these rail tickets which said Rome and back, which was, I'm pleased to say it did say and back, because I did wonder how we were going to get back. And sure enough, all these trains left Lime Street, I don't know, between 3 o'clock and 8 o'clock on Monday evening. And there were crowds watching the trains go, let alone the people on the train. And we got there. I remember my mother packed two haversacks, as they were called, and I don't know whether they're still called haversacks, with sandwiches and stuff, one for my brother and one for me, for the journey. Anyway, we'd ate everything in them by crew, and we weren't out the country. We were barely out the north of England. And we got there on Wednesday morning, got through Wednesday daytime, saw a game where, you know, for Liverpool to end up that game as European champions, you know, it was the top of the tree. And then we got a train back. We had to get on the train by midnight, and we didn't get back till about 6 o'clock in the evening on the Friday, having eaten very little at all. And we got home too late to actually go Tommy Smith's testimonial. I mean, talk about timing from Tommy, blimey. But we did manage to get to the pub. So it was a fantastic experience, and an adventure is the right word. And of course, with a happy ending.
And you've been to all six. I know we've had Istanbul in 2005. Can you pick your favourite one, or are they all different?
I think they're all different. I think I've picked my favourite one. I think we've already just spoken about it. I think that first European Cup final was just an iconic moment. Listen, Istanbul was something totally different. That was quite remarkable. And by then, I was the CEO of the FA, and I hadn't been in the job long, but I'd spotted very early that Liverpool could, not definitely, but could win the Champions League, and that Everton absolutely could finish in the top four. And I could see a situation occurring here where Liverpool would finish out the top four, but be champions of Europe. And it seemed to me to be ridiculous. It wouldn't matter who the champions were, that they couldn't compete the following season. And I kept alerting UEFA to this, and they were sort of suggesting, well, you know, it's up for you guys to sort it out. And I thought, well, however we sort this out, if Everton finish above Liverpool and they're in the top four, they are in the Champions League next season. What happened, of course, by 3-0 at half time, one or two of the UEFA bigwigs, including Michel Platini, sort of intimated, well, the problem had gone away. But by the end of the game, it hadn't, remarkably. And 3-3, and the penalty shootout. And we did manage to do two things. We did manage, after a lot of hard negotiation with UEFA, to get Liverpool able to defend their trophy, albeit they started almost during the middle of the Wimbledon final, and Everton to be able to start in the qualifying round of the Champions League. But that game, you know, Liverpool, I mean, you speak to Carragher, Jamie will say Liverpool probably only played well for 15 minutes, but just the dynamic of the whole night. I mean, Milan scored after 90 seconds. I mean, they could have had three or four. They could have done what Liverpool did to Manchester United on Sunday. The game could have been out of sight, but then that remarkable period. And I think when you see Vladimir Smith score from outside the box, you know you're watching something unusual. Then that massive double save from Dudek, and then the Shevchenko penalty, where he was one of the great strikers, but you know he sort of passed it back to the keeper. It's unbelievable. Fantastic night, fantastic event, and another Liverpool moment, really fantastic.
Well, Brian, time has beaten us. I could talk to you all night. I've got so many more questions to ask you, but your book, 60 Years A Red and Counting, A Lifetime's Passion, is out now, isn't it, in all good bookshops. And It's a really great read, and you know, 60 years covers a lot of supporting Liverpool, doesn't it, as well?
And 90,000 words. I ain't doing it again. But it's a lovely opportunity. It was a lockdown sort of situation for me. Sit down and do something meaningful. And I did spot October 2021 was 60 years. So I thought that was a very good opportunity to pull it all together and try and do a season by season narrative, and hopefully I've achieved that.